This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. The economic and cultural changes of the 21st century are transforming world cities and along with it, the practice of architecture as well. Joining me now to discuss the role architects play in thinking about the future of cities and building urban cultures are David Janotin and Michael Kokora from the Office for Metropolitan Architecture. The duo are here in Malaysia for Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia's public lecture series. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Thank you.
Thank you. We're fine.
Would you like to just tell me a little bit about the Office for Metropolitan Architecture of OME? What does that actually mean? Or what do you really do?
We are involved in planning of buildings and planning of cities, but we also go beyond into other domains where architects play a role, but not always have the lead. It's an office that was founded by Rem Koolhaas, one of the famous architects in the world in 1974 in the Netherlands. And now we have five different offices in America. Rotterdam, still our headquarters in the Netherlands, Middle East, and Asia.
Okay. And who are the brains behind this outfit today?
The good thing is we're a partnership of 10 people, and we're all the brains, you could
say.
So
worldwide,
along with our staff.
Okay.
Our office is very intentionally a lateral structured office, which means the best ideas are the ones that go forward. Mm-hmm. So it's even if an intern in the office has a good idea, our ears are always open and we're always connecting on all different levels.
Very much a flat organization.
Exactly.
All right. And David, I understand you joined OME in 2008. You launched the Hong Kong office in 2009 and you became a partner in 2010. Could you elaborate on the sort of work that you actually do?
When I joined OMA, I was working very closely with Rem Koolhaas on his projects, and I was more or less the interface between the office and the clients for the projects he worked on, and also back to the teams in the office. When I worked like that, I was working on several projects in Asia, in the south of China, in Hong Kong, and in Taipei, which logically led to the Hong Kong office. And I was asked to start it. And Michael was already working with me at that moment. And we moved with 12 people from the Netherlands to Hong Kong to set up the office, which is now about 100 people big.
Right. And Michael, you joined in 2007. And your responsibilities?
I started work in 2007 in Rotterdam, but I was immediately working on a project in China, the Shenzhen Stock Exchange. So from the beginning, I think within the first month, I was immediately traveling back and forth between Europe and Asia, and also had a deep affinity with Asia to begin with. And it simply suited me well and continued with the project and continued with starting the office together with David. Mm-hmm. In Hong Kong, and then just expanding on a series of projects.
You're actually set to transform part of a former shipyard in Shanghai. You want to tell me that project? What is it about?
Correct. It's in a newer part of Pudong in Shanghai, along the Huangpo River. It's a very small project, but what's interesting about it is it's a project that is engaged in a larger public space around it and is primarily a public building that's about engaging the landscape. So the space inside is an exhibition center, but the building itself acts as a kind of spatial armature that engages the plaza with different kinds of events. It can be fashion shows, concerts, series of other activities. So it's one of the themes that actually occurs in our work globally is a building is not just a building, but it's a building that's about the public space and about engaging the environment around it, mm-hmm. not creating kind of one-off icons, et cetera, et cetera.
Very interesting. How did this idea of engaging your environment come about as far as architecture is concerned? And why wasn't it not there back in the day?
Our belief is that architecture is very contextual. So you really have to kind of understand the area you build in, the people that you build for, and all social domains involved in it. Therefore, for us, Making a building is engaging and should really respond to that context in many different ways, in many different levels. That's not always the case. Kind of architecture is sometimes also used to just make a statement that is irrespective of that context. For us, that especially in the Asian context with the growth that is happening here, the speed in which it's happening here, it's easy to forget about the history, the social domain, and then everything becomes generic, which we as an office want to avoid. And therefore, we inject ourselves in that context and always respond to it because we think it's our responsibility to do so.
Do you think it's too late? Has Asia sort of forgotten to engage with the, you know, culture and history?
No, absolutely not. Because if you look at, there's one kind of crucial moment in every city or even country's history is when the population switches from rural to urban, which is something that's been continuing to happen, let's say unevenly throughout Asia. But for example, in China, China just reached 2 years ago, 50% is now urban. So just saying that in a country that size with 1 billion people. Sure. Means there's still a huge open terrain in cities to and opportunity to think about public space in that domain.
I mean, 70% of the world's population is expected to be living in cities in years to come. Do you see that as a challenge, or is that going to change architecture and how architects actually, you know, come up with ideas?
Of course, the pressure on cities is very important to understand and to take at heart and to make it also kind of really refer to the culture that is in that city. And I think architects have an important contribution by understanding kind of in which spaces people feel comfortable, not only inside buildings but also outside the buildings and also kind of in between different spaces, so transferal spaces, you could mention it. But for us, I think as architects, we can do this alone. City planning has so many domains that go beyond our profession, and therefore crossovers with other profession are extremely important to give the right answers. What you will also see is kind of urbanization will at a certain moment also decrease because a lot of people will get a lot of wealth in the cities and then will long back to a situation with more space, a situation closer connected to their cultural heritage, and they will invest the money they earn in these urban domains in rural areas where they might have come from. And that is also a very typical question that is going to come up in Asia, as you see the development starting already. And there, for architects, there is also a very important role because that will be a slow interaction and will also be much more precise than the urbanization.
Is globalization making it easier for corporation and developers to do business in cities around the world? I mean, is that having an effect on the practice of architecture?
I think it has an effect, but what is very important to say is kind of what you see is that developers are still very much connected to the area they work in because to be able to give the right answer for the amount of money they want to invest, you need to really understand what you're doing. Investment money travels all over the world, but the actual work in the different countries is still very much related to developers that know the context very well. And that's also why we as architects should inject ourselves in that same context and not operate in a global way somewhere in an ivory tower far away, do sketches, but really understand what we're doing
underground. What you do is very subjective. Some people may relate to it, Michael, some people won't. How then do you strike that balance? Because you, earlier this year, OMA founder Rem Koolhaas, he defended one of his Asia office's key projects, the CCTV building, after Chinese President Xi Jinping, he called for an end to the construction of weird architecture in the country. I mean, how, it's one person's, opinion as opposed to, you know, I don't know how many people agree with him, but how did, you know, you manage that?
Well, first of all, to back up just a little bit, as an office, how we address this question, and it is a question, how do you relate to a place or to a country or to a culture? For us, this is also why we have 10 partners and 400 people with regional offices based in the places where we work. We operate in a different model from a lot of other international firms, in that we believe we need to have people working in our offices from the places where we build. So if we're building a project in Malaysia, for example, we have people from Malaysia working on the project together with us. It's not like David said, working from some ivory tower in New York or London and kind of exporting our own design style. It's about a design related to the place. With respect to Xi Jinping's comment, first of all, there's a little bit of a misunderstanding in that Xi Jinping, he said this statement about weird architecture. He didn't mention any of our buildings in particular, as far as we understand. But it's funny he says this, because actually it's something, as an office, we agree with and have been critical about ourselves in many ways, in many cities outside of China, and that architecture should be about a place, an experience, and derived specifically from that place, and also about innovating a performance within the building. Form shouldn't be arbitrary. It should be the result of how the building performs for the people that occupy it.
And how would you know that it is doing the job after you have actually put up this building?
We never leave when we have put up a building. We are constantly there with the clients, also when the buildings are in use, when alterations need to happen. But also we constantly monitor with the people that work there how they find the space, how they like the use of it. And through that we learn a lot too. So we constantly generate feedback to the things we have done and also the things we are currently having under planning. Mm-hmm. So it's a very transparent way of design. We welcome every idea and every feedback in it, and we do something with it or try to do something with it.
In the studio with us, David Jonathan, Global Managing Partner, and Michael Kokora, partner of for the Office for Metropolitan Architecture, OMA. They're going to give a talk which is happening tonight, am I correct?
Yes.
Today at the White Box and Map at Publica.
At 7:30.
That's right. And we'll come back and continue this discussion. It's going to be on urban culture.
Yes.
What does that really mean? We'll find out up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. In the studio with us, David Jonathan, Global Managing Partner, and Michael Kokora, partner of at the Office for Metropolitan Architecture, OMA. They're here to give a public lecture, part of the Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia's public lecture too. It's titled Building Urban Culture. What does urban culture really mean?
I think urban culture has a lot of different meanings and a lot of different layers to it. It starts, first of all, with the place. I think a number of the values we talked about earlier in this interview come through: public space, identification with culture. You could say culture, but more, let's say, language-specific culture. As well as just simply the different types of activities that engage the space. David, do you want to maybe continue?
I think what for us is very important is that buildings perform according to the program, but also always give something back to the surroundings and interact with these surroundings in such a way that it provokes use that was by the initial brief not intended. And very often that additional use is in a social domain or in a cultural domain. So for a large group of people, recognizable within the context the building is in, for the people specifically there. And therefore there's a different engagement with buildings that we design, not only by the users that were planned to use the building, but also by the people that live in the city and surround the building. Which contributes a lot to the understanding of society, but also the social meaning of what happens in that city. And for us, that is kind of something we always try to provoke by giving our answers in design. So we never only follow the brief. We always search for an extra component that strengthens the local culture and that gives opportunities of use that were not asked and not per se are predictable.
Is it all about building cities? Is the emphasis on building cities as opposed to buildings, designing buildings? What are your thoughts on that? Where should our emphasis be? Because we are more than 7 billion people now. What are we looking at now? What are our priorities? Building proper cities? Or is it all about the building?
Well, it's both, obviously, I think. But actually, you could say that there's something interesting maybe to mention about the history of our office. The office was established in 1975 at a time when cities were under intense criticism. It was around the time of the famous Pruitt-Igoe housing project was demolished. This was a housing project known for violence and internal activities inside of it, so it was simply torn down. So there was a deep sense of skepticism about the city in general at that moment in time, and part of the reason the office was also formed in that time and also named Office for Metropolitan Architecture is a response that there's, I would say, even there's a kind of hopeful response for cities and their continuing development. And looking at where we are today, also in Asia, with the shift from urban to rural, there's one aspect of our office that we didn't mention, which is the mirror image of our office, which is called AMO. It's actually the opposite of OMA, where we engage in research. And in this office, you could say we're engaging in the countryside itself as, let's say, an equally important domain relative to cities.
Your thoughts, David?
I think the city is the starting point of thinking if you have to build a building inside of that city. You can never ignore that a question is part of a larger whole, and that larger whole needs to be planned well for the component to excel. So, yes, from an architectural perspective, the city is very important to us, and we like to think as architects on the planning, but also we like to be engaged in political discussions even of how the city should evolve and what should be involved in its planning forward. But the building itself can also spark something that is important for the city and can take an initiative in the development of a city. So we approach it from two sides. We work on that research and political domain related to the city, but at the same time, we try to provoke with our buildings a use or an unexpected context that makes people think about their living environment, create new social possibilities that were not necessarily planned before, and because of that, steer a direction also from bottom up for the development of cities. So we really think both are important, and we as architects should not only engage on the building level, but we should bring it in a higher mode of discussion and speed, in my point of view.
But how people use open spaces in different parts of the world really differs. I mean, you can see open spaces here and, you know, in a temperate climate, for an example, people love their open spaces. We hide away from open spaces because it's hot, you know, if it's out in the open. So then how do you come in and understand people's cultural values? And is it possible that you could possibly get it wrong as well?
You can always get it wrong.
Yeah.
But if you do proper research and if you inject yourself in the context you're going to build in, you will understand it. One of the key things there, of course, also is already mentioned by Michael. You always will work together with people that come from that culture and that background. And they will, of course, warn us when we go in a wrong direction immediately. But it's interesting that you say here in Kuala Lumpur or in Malaysia, you hide from open spaces.
Yes, we do.
While in the same way, your city has so many open spaces that are very well known and also very well utilized. So it's also about use is not per se exposed use. It could also be organized use. It could also be shielded use. But the spaces here are actually extremely intensely used, and that intensity contributes to the city as a whole. It's not a city where you don't see any activity in the public space. On the contrary, you see a lot of activity which makes the building shine, in my point of view. So yes, there is a climate issue, but there are many traditional ways to overcome it and many new technology ways to overcome that. And you see that use of the public space being important in KL, in my point of view.
We love our malls.
And you have
anywhere in the world,
hundreds of them all over the place.
That's the funny thing, especially coming to Malaysia or Indonesia or even Singapore, there's always, everyone is, the first question we receive as architects is, how can we create more public space in the city? And you're saying what sounds almost like the opposite in a way is.
But it really depends, you know. We love our malls. That much I know in
but
Malaysia.
That's because there's air conditioning and, of course, there's a lot of commercial pressure, which people are seduced to. But you also love your parks and you love your markets and you love your original historic buildings that don't have air conditioning as well. So there is, of course, a good mix needed that conditions, but also that exposes.
And I think getting it right comes from careful observation and study of the particular place, and then creating spaces that are not, say, like a shopping mall, always programmed. Spaces that could occupy different uses, contain or create a platform for the unexpected, things people don't imagine.
But are our cities becoming similar? Mm. And are they becoming faceless because of globalization, really?
No, I think it mainly has to do with the speed, especially in Asia, the speed in which the development took place. You know, Asia is developing has maybe developed in 30 years what Europe did in 300 years and what America did in 150 years. So the time frame is very different, and in that it also means that kind of singular hypes were kind of made so large at such a large scale, they had a huge impact. But you see now that every country in Asia, but also every city within these countries, is actually thinking much more related to their own position, their own development. So yes, it has been because of the speed of development. And what you see is that cities look more like each other. Mm-hmm. But at this moment of time, you see all the cities in Asia taking a stand related to the local and related to their own historic values, which is not too late because there are still a lot around. There is still an unbelievable amount of energy that relates to 30 years ago. That's also the good thing. The memory is still there and the memory can be resurrected. So I don't think that Asian cities are actually so alike. If you look maybe at the skyline pictures, they look very much alike. But when you look inside and you discover the things that are very contextual, you will see that they're actually very different.
Is authenticity central to urban culture?
Of course. It needs to be real.
Could you give me an example?
No, I think what you can see in China, there are many cities that still have older parts of the city, but also their older the parks that are already there for 100 years. And what you see is that people still find these places and utilize them a lot. So that memory and that realism is constantly there. And what you see now is that new planning looks at these elements much more serious again and takes part of the values that created that back into the modern day planning. And so I see that happening everywhere.
And how does it impact national and cultural identity? Major urban architectural projects, how does that help with national and cultural identity?
there's a long history of that in development, but I think the responsibility of architects and urban planners is should be more emphasis on not so much the building aspect, but the negative space between the buildings, and the activities that those spaces potentially could house, so that a national identity isn't shaped by, let's say, purely icons or a projection of an image by a, let's say, a political apparatus, but is actually projected by the people through the use of space. Mm-hmm. That would be my
and you can work against that. Society as well, isn't it? Or can work against national and identity as well, isn't
it? Yeah.
If it is badly planned or thought through.
And national identity is, of course, also a difficult subject, because who determines what the national identity is? Very often, a national identity is comprised of many regional identities and many local identities. So you need to kind of make sure that everybody recognizes itself in a way in these identities, so they can never be singular. They always need to give much more answers and reflect to many minds, which makes it very complex. Identity is not a singular thing. Identity is related to as many people we have on this planet. Mm-hmm. So you can never give one singular right answer, but you can do your best to combine and understand many of these different localized identities and try to give an answer that speaks to them all.
Right. And, you know, architects predominantly work in two ways. And how do you, which one do you respond to? Do you respond precisely to your clients' needs and demands, or do you respond to what the client asks and then reinterpret it? Is that how you function? Somebody's got to pay you.
Of course.
And you and need to think about that.
Of course, our clients are...
always right. No.
Always right and deeply important. No, they are deeply important to us. And one of the, let's say, amazing things about... I think our office is oftentimes the clients we work with simply are interested in the kinds of questions we're also interested in addressing. And we end up forming, no matter the situation, we end up forming very deep personal relationships with our clients surrounding the projects that we work on. And it's the reason this forms, I think, is because it's not simply their way or our way or their way or the city's way, but it's the way we approach a project is by looking at a multitude of conditions, society, politics, building use, program, technology, and so on.
And that's a craft.
And it's about it's about a synthetic of all of that, and that's something we're very good at studying and presenting as mm-hmm. well, in a way to create unity behind a project, on not only between us and the client, but also every project is political, so within the political domain as well.
Right. Would you say that a building has at least two lives? The one imagined by its maker and the life it lives afterward, and they are never the same. Have you felt that from experience?
I think every building has so many lives that you can never imagine them. So we don't imagine exactly what the life will be or reproject it. We think in possibilities and which possibilities will be utilized or will be highlighted through the users is always a question mark. The only thing you can do is direct kind of the ideas and figure out to which one people respond most. So I don't want to speak about two lives or 10 lives. Kind of for us, the life of a building is a continuous story that continuously changes by the people that uses it. So instead of imagining it in a singular situation, we try to imagine it in many and try to come up with an answer that caters for that.
The reinvention and reimagining of cities is taking place all over the world, as you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But what energy do you think is inspiring this reinvention? Does it depend on the country and the people, or do you feel it's like a global movement towards reinventing cities? Because you see a lot of urban regeneration going on in Malaysia, for an example.
I think one of the key things there is that every person strives for innovation and constantly wants kind of to rethink in a way that an solution can be brought to something that might be rooted in culture that is 300 years or even older. So I think the innovation in cities is as human beings are. We constantly want to kind of rethink and go beyond, but we also want to feel at home and want to recognize. So I think that is probably a human thing, and therefore constantly innovation of cities is something that keeps on going and will always take different turns in the dialogue and will always be there. So I think it's very human that is happening, and architects are important in that discussion because we need to guide the discussion in such a way that the right elements are addressed, not only on the physical terms, but also socially, politically, economically, etc.
So organically, as we speak, it's happening anyway.
Yes.
So it's your work to nudge them along
exactly.
And make sure they go in the right direction. What if you, my fear is if you're missing, then what happens?
we will not miss them. We sleep little and we follow as much as we can.
This is the whole world we're talking about. You've got 10 offices, did you say?
Five
offices. That's the rest of the world.
But there are more architects, and there are more architects that are very responsible in this whole innovation of cities. So we're not alone, and there are many, many people there that think about the city in many different ways and in many good ways.
While we're talking about the architects, what do you think architects are not doing now that you wish they were doing more of?
I wish they were doing more collaboration with each other.
Yes.
The biggest thing, actually not in all communities, but the biggest thing that you find, at least that we find missing in, let's say, the majority of it, especially in the West, I would say, is this idea of the importance of the individual versus the collective. Mm. And I think it's a really dangerous situation. There used to be a time when architects would really collaborate together, even though, let's say, they're competing commercial entities. But
what happened?
That's also a long story. Capitalism.
Capitalism. I have a bone to pick with capitalism. I always say it.
I want to go more to the positive side than what happened. But you see, I think we see it forming in a lot of different places where there are communities of architects collaborating together, much more on a grassroots level, not so much on the corporate level. And those are the architects that we have deep affinities with. We've met a very nice group in Indonesia who, for example, they every time one of them finishes a project, they get together different offices and critique the project and think about how to move not only their work together, but their work as a collective together.
How important is critique, David?
Oh, critique is everything. And you need to constantly question what you're doing. And everybody needs to kind of learn how to deal with critique. I think in the modern society, critique is very often seen as something that is negative. While critique is very often there to build upon. And that is in our office. Everything is critiqued constantly by everybody in every level. And each comment is taken as serious. And we don't leave any stone turned to find out if that critique has something to add to what we embarked on. So critique is extremely important, and people should be much more open to critique and less sensitive to it. It's not you don't need to defend yourself for what you're doing, but you need to make sure that every argument behind it is correct, and you will only achieve that by listening to critique, taking it on board and bringing it a step further. So critique in our profession, but I think in every profession, is important and at this time underestimated and made too negative.
Yeah. And what can we expect this evening, Michael?
You'll expect some evidence of everything we talked about so far. But coming back to the critique situation, it's I think also if there's a project out there that's not being critiqued, it's probably not a very challenging or experimental project that's really testing new ground.
Hmm. would you say? You did make an impact.
I don't know if it's about making an impact, but it's perhaps not testing the human condition, which is ultimately also our responsibility, to see what can be done further, mm-hmm. not just what has been done and repeating the past successes or failures, but really testing the potential future. And without critique, then it's not going to move forward.
Do you think about the future when you are designing, David?
Of course, a project in an architectural domain or in an urban domain takes many years, so you have to project and you need to kind of think about what the future will bring. Mm-hmm. But that goes very natural because you're constantly busy with new ideas that will anyway be realized in that future. So it's not a topic that we think futuristically about what we're doing, but we're constantly projecting ourselves, of course, in a leap of time.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to be presenting this evening. So it's a follow-up of this discussion, would you say?
There are parts,
in a way.
Parts of this discussion will come back. We will also talk about how we work, which for us is important to show, and it's also important for people to understand.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to really try to emphasize the process behind our work more so than just simply what we're working on.
Right. So more the architectural side of things.
More the idea side of things and how those ideas come about.
Okay. So you can catch the talk by David and Michael today at the White Box at MAP at Publica. Reception and registration begins from 7:15 p.m. and the lectures will begin at 8 p.m. sharp. So don't be late. For more information, you can visit Pam's Facebook page at facebook.com/pam.dls. Thank you both, gentlemen, for joining us today. It was a pleasure indeed. All the best for tonight.
Thank you very much.
David Janatan, Global Managing Partner, and Michael Kokora, Partner at the Office for Metropolitan Architecture on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.